And welcome back, folks, to another episode of Rumination of Red Rum. Today, I am your host, Brendan. And everyone's leaving. Everyone has left. Oh, Ian's back. Kyle's trying to be coy about it. And Kyle's back. All right. Today,
Sorry about that.
We got a banger for you. We are back into our franchise deep dive with Saul for... Will this one hold up for Kyle, whose last film was his favorite in the Saw franchise? Will he realize that the guy in the first trap isn't wearing a wig?
No way.
Before we get into that, let me introduce the wonderful people here with me. Hello, Ian. I'd like to introduce you now.
That was pretty cool.
With us, as always, the Ghost of Tsushima, Danny Phantom, names. It's Ian with two E's. How you doing, Ian?
It's me, the other names.
How's it going, Brennan?
Chilling. What do you got for me?
Well, I got this Simply Spiked mango peach hard seltzer. It's straight fire, and it's so tasty, and I can't believe you're disrespecting it. Kyle, I know you weren't drinking around the super flavored seltzer.
Age. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was.
Like this kind of flavored. Like
yeah, she was like 6 years ago.
Oh. Well, that was more mainly just like what White Claws and
White Claws and Trulies.
Now every goddamn beverage has a seltzer version of it, and it's annoying.
It's true. Yeah, within the last like 2 or 3 years, the game's changed.
Do you remember when Not Your Mama's just like completely took off out of nowhere?
No. Not Your Dad's Root Beer?
That's what I'm thinking of, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Not Your Dad's Root Beer. And then there was like Not Your Mama's Apple Pie. And it felt kind of sexist a little bit.
I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
Oh, shit. I hated those. Also, with us, you know him, you love him, you want some more of him. He is the slick black Cadillac. Yeah, he's not, I guess, would that technically be considered? Oh, it's a snapback. It's not a snapback. I don't know. I don't know hats. He writes with a number two pencil, and he is number one in all of our hearts. America's favorite dog dad. It's Kyle with a K.
It's a new one. Most dad hats aren't snapbacks. Snapbacks are like the little, like,
dad hats. I think that's yeah. Okay. That makes more sense.
Yeah, dad hats aren't snapbacks. But I'm doing good. I have this Spindrift pomegranate sparkling water. And as Ian would say, it's straight fire. it's pretty good. I like it a lot.
Did I actually say that?
Yeah, you actually said
that. Yeah, you like hell yeah. 30 well, seconds ago.
Yeah. Well, it is. I wasn't wrong.
So. The only Spindrift I've had is the lemon one, and it tastes like battery acid.
Damn. I like the seltzer in a can with all the bubbles. I don't know which one that one is, but
isn't it just called like Bubble or something?
I think so.
There is one called just Bubble.
Yeah, because Michael Bublé was like advertising for it hardcore for a while.
Yeah, that one's good.
Ian, what have you been up to?
Nothing much.
Okay, Kyle, what have you been up to?
Nothing much. Just kidding. I'm preparing for Dune 2 tomorrow. Not excited for it, really. I don't really care about it. Dune 1, too long, man. It's kind of a slog.
You're not a what do they call themselves? Dune goons?
I like that name. I kind of want to be a Dune goon, but no, I'm not a Dune goon. Dom's a Dune goon. She's really into it. This last watch was a lot more fun than the first time I saw it, though. She was like, we had like breakdown conversations, and she was like going over all the lore and backstories and stuff of everyone.
So this is Sandworm.
Yeah. Ian, question.
How many books has she read? Has she read the whole series, all the spinoffs, all the...
She's read it all.
Like, even, like, the 12 spinoffs and everything
as
like that?
As far as I know, yes. I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure. Because I don't really know all the books that are involved, but she's read more than one. I know that. Yeah. She's read like a good chunk. I don't know how many there are, but...
What does she like about them?
The way I hear her talk about it is Dune is like Game of Thrones in space. She likes all the political shit. She likes that, like the houses, like the warring factions and the houses and stuff. I think she gets really into like the political side of the stories.
Gotcha.
More than like necessarily the fantasy or the science fiction elements. I think she likes like the more people versus people aspect of it. But yeah.
Well, let me just spoil the later books for you. Capitalism does not work. Ian, I'm going to give you a chance to redeem yourself. Or are you just going to stick with nothing much?
I just want to say Christopher Walken played the Emperor of the Galaxy, which was hilarious in Dune 2.
Yeah.
In the new one?
In the new one. Like
Christopher Walken's in the new Dune.
Major budget motion picture event of the year. Christopher Walken plays the Emperor.
And I just want to give a huge shout out to Chris Walken, because he still holds the Rumination of Red Rum trophy for worst wig in the biz from The Prophecy. Yeah. So shout out to Christopher Walken. Oh yeah, you really do. It's actually a pretty good movie. But Christopher Walken, shout out to you. You still are number one in ROR's heart. So
yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah.
And he's just himself in Dune, and it is...
He's himself in every movie.
There's a lot of funny moments in Dune.
Is Dune 2 a 4.6 or 7? I know you personally don't think it is, but can you see it? Can you see it?
Visually?
No, technically? He's asking if you can understand why it has a 4.6.
The main... People are like moths, right? You show them something nice, they're gonna love it.
Flame.
just like Avatar, just like Dune, you know, it's just the visuals. It's the visuals.
Okay. You think it's just the visuals, huh?
100%, because the story is just like Space Jesus. Cool. And then that's it. There's nothing like revolutionary about the story. There's no like twists and turns. It's literally just... Okay. Super linear, and there's really nothing like special about it. That being said, Christopher Walken is amazing in that film, and he's
I'm not even gonna try.
What the fuck?
I saw the downward trajectory of that, and I was just like, I'm gonna stop it there. But I will say, I am hoping to walk out of that theater a Dune goon tomorrow. I hope I could brand myself as one tomorrow, but I don't see it happening. I don't see it.
It's better than the first one, but you know,
that's good to know. Brennan, what have you been up to?
I've watched a bunch of bug/creepy crawly based movies over the past few days, and I've had some very awful dreams. My sleep schedule has been completely ruined because of it. I'm not necessarily scared of spiders or things that crawl. I don't like them. But the amount of spider-based nightmares I've had recently has been really fucking with me. But out of all the movies...
What insect, real insect, terrifies you the most? Like, are you arachnophobic, or are you like, for example, Dom can have a tarantula. I will address your answer in just a second. Dom will have a tarantula crawl all over, not a problem. But the moment a cockroach comes out of she can't even bear the sight of a cockroach, a dead cockroach even. Which cockroaches for me, don't care about them, right? Tarantulas, spiders, huge arachnophobic. So it's weird how the lines blur between people and their fears. So you said a millipede?
Yeah, the really long ones that have like hundreds of legs usually come out around the springtime. In this area, they come out around the springtime. because they're just so fast. And like, I know they don't have like pincers or anything that can hurt you. Mm. It's just,
it's all the legs. Kind of looks like hair.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hairy insects is where I draw the line. Mm. Insects shouldn't have hair. It's weird.
I'm only afraid of spiders. That's it. I'm fine with any other bug. I actually had an experience at the Smithsonian in DC, the Natural History Smithsonian.
Mm-hmm. We know what it is.
Every museum there is called a Smithsonian. But right. There was a bug lady there, and she was like panning people bugs. She was like, "Hey, here you go.
I'm the bug lady."
She handed me this giant ass like grasshopper that was probably bigger than my cell phone. And
I would have said fuck none of that.
She put it on my hand and it like was crawling off and it just fell and it made like a thud on the floor.
Yeah, like a rock hitting the floor.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's like, oh no.
Oh, also,
and then I just walked away.
What are your guys' thoughts on stick bugs? I might be afraid of them.
They're so cool.
Yeah.
I don't mind stick bugs.
I should rephrase. Not like the meme stick bugs, but like the ones that look like tree branches and stuff where they have.
Yeah. The one from like A Bug's Life. Who's like, mm-hmm. you know, he's like the long. He's in A Bug's Life.
Okay.
But you just don't like the fact that he looks like something else.
I think so.
I think you can mistakenly.
He could blend in.
Yes. Yeah. Like if there's a chance I could put my hand on you and not notice, I'm probably not going to be a fan of you.
That's actually a good point. Wow, I agree. I'm not afraid of stick bugs, but you're kind of deeper turning me on the idea of being afraid of stick bugs. Yeah.
But the one. So, Kyle, the one movie that I watched, Slugs, you had said you were interested
in
watching that. Banger. The practicals, fucking insane. The slug wrangler that they had on set did a good job.
He's coming high school.
Slug wrangler. That's disgusting.
But the one movie I watched that I don't know how to take, and I'm curious if you guys have seen it, it is 2006's Bug, directed by William Friedkin, starring Ashley Judd, Joaquin Phoenix, and Harry Connick Jr. Really? Yeah, it's one of those, and I even said this on my Letterboxd review, there's the final 30 minutes of the film just basically devolves into madness between Ashley Judd and Joaquin Phoenix. And I have seen monologues and scenes from the last 30 minutes of Bug done so many times by edgy theater kids in acting classes and in acting workshops, and it's never done well because, you know, these edgy theater kids think that erratic movements and being loud is acting when it's not.
Shout out to Allegoria. You had to be there, I guess. That's pretty funny.
But that was an interesting movie. I'd be interested if you guys checked it out at some point.
Oh, no, I will definitely check it out. Ian, already seen it?
I watched that movie when I was young, super young, probably when it came out. And I was very disappointed to find out that there were practically no bugs in the actual film.
Oh, I remember. Yes. Didn't you watch that recently? I remember that being one of your reviews.
No, that was like my childhood.
I'm thinking of something else.
Memory. But obviously, the whole drug addiction thing went right over my head when I was a kid. So,
well, I don't even think that the drug addiction is a very minor portion of it. It's just all about conspiracy, which, for me, should check all my fucking boxes. Mm-hmm. But Kyle, what were you gonna ask?
No, it's unrelated to the movie, so I was letting you guys do your thing.
That's fine.
Arachnophobia, you guys watch that yet?
Yeah. That was a movie that I've only ever seen on TV.
Yeah.
And I would like to revisit it now that I have self-awareness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Last time I watched it, I was a kid, and that's where it's going to stay. I don't like it. It used to freak me out. Hate
remake,
it. They use all real spiders. And
yes.
It's fucking like terrible.
Hundreds and hundreds of real
and
spiders.
And they're just everywhere. And just, not a fan. It always ruined me as a kid for the longest time because there's a scene where he pours out his cereal into a bowl and the spider just falls out of the cereal box into his bowl. And for the rest of my young adult life, I was just expecting that to happen to me. Always. I would always check my, like, if I ever was like munching on cereal, I would always investigate the bag. I would take the bag out of the box and investigate the bag before I, dude, it like ruined me. It's kind of like when people would see Psycho and like check their shower curtain and shit, or like Jaws, they were afraid to go in the water. I literally checked my cereal every time I ate it because of arachnophobia.
Ian, I'm Kyle's mom. Kyle, why are you stabbing your cereal?
I'm Kyle.
We're from California, so we don't sound like that, but
Ma, I get where I'm you're just going checking with it, for though. Spiders. Ma.
That was Kyle.
Oh, love it. Oh my god. But Ian, this is your very last shot of we're moving on. Are you still sticking with nothing much?
No, he did. He talked about
the Dune, but the two things I did were future episodes. Oh. So
yeah, we just went on.
I'm not gonna talk about that.
Okay. All right. I might have blanked out. But we're not here to talk about sandworms.
Or thank you,
the spider that's crawling right behind Kyle.
Let's just talk about that.
We are here today to talk about Saw 4. Before we get into the discussion of Saw 4, let us dive into some very drunkily written fear facts. All right, fingers crossed, boys. This could be very good or very bad.
I'm strapped in.
Saw is the 2007 installment to the Saw franchise. Okay. Huh. All right, starting off strong. And would mark the final installment in the Darren Lynn Bousman-directed trilogy, which was Saw 2, 3, and 4. Mm. Writing duo Marcus Dunstan and Patrick Melton would start their Saw quadrilogy with Saw 4, and they would go on. They'd also go on to write films like the Feast trilogy, the two collector films, the first which we have covered, and the story for Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, as well as the Into the Dark episode Pilgrim, which I enjoyed very much. Audiences were shocked to learn that while this film starts where 3 ended, it was indeed told concurrently to Saw 3.
Saw 3 and 4. Sorry, go ahead.
I can't wait to talk about that.
It threw me off.
Saw 3 and 4 were filmed back-to-back instead of the usual 1 year at a time as the other ones and how the rest of the franchise would be. Saw 4 received overwhelmingly negative reviews as it gobbled up $139 million against its $10 million budget. While Saw 3 would progress certain aspects of the story, Saw 4 would go on to set the story path for the final three films of the Saw franchise original run. Darren Lynn Bousman was offered the directorial role when Saw 2 and 3 production designer David Hackle unfortunately had to turn down the role as he was offered it the day his wife was the day he found out she had cancer. Fret not, Hackle would take over for Darren Lynn Bousman with Saw 5 and 6. Dunstan and Melton had their script, The Midnight Man, which we know as The Collector, read by a Saw executive producer. This executive producer pitched The Midnight Man as a Saw prequel. OG producers Mark Berg and Oren Coles didn't want a prequel, but they were impressed enough to bring Dunstan and Melton on as writers to write Saw 4 from the ground up. Saw 4 would go extra hard with scene transitions, a franchise trademark, and interestingly enough, every scene transition was completed practically through crafty set design and camera work.
That's interesting, but let me tell you real quick.
Love it.
Okay, just never mind. Go ahead, continue.
It's peak.
It's insanity is what it is, dude. I was just cackling at one of them. Go ahead, sorry.
Just as the brain surgery scene in Saw 3, the autopsy scene was completely untouched by the MPAA due to its medical accuracy and thanks to shows like CSI. Donnie Wahlberg was written out of the story due to his schedule, but once his schedule opened up, he was quickly written in and, as we all know, written out.
Boom.
That's a good line. But how do we feel about Saw 4? Do we enjoy it as much as we enjoy Casus Mandalore's beautiful lips and his big busty bosom? Let's play a game and find out. Dude,
who?
Casus Mandalore is Detective Hoffman. He has got some beautiful puffy lips and his chest. Oh my God, his chest. He doesn't have pecs.
He's a burly man.
He has breasts.
He's a burly man. Yeah,
he is fucking gorgeous.
He looks like a brick. Like a walking brick. Does he have a neck? I don't know. I didn't see a neck.
He has a neck that's right.
He's squared off.
Dude. He's like one step away from becoming John Cena.
Yeah, he's squared off in all the right ways.
Oh my God, he's a beautiful man.
Let's get him on the show.
Why didn't he hang on?
I'm going to invite him on.
Actually, no, I think that would be bad because he's...
Is he like a racist now or something?
Oh, he's British.
It's not that he was racist. It's that he's always been racist, apparently. And
against who?
So Saul Twitter... Saul Twitter is very half and half about him. Mm. You know, there's the people that are saying we like Hoffman, not Casus Mandalore. And then the other half are saying that, you know, we don't want to separate the actor from the character.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily know if he's racist. I know that he follows a lot of right leaning political people.
I mean, I do too, but that I'm not racist.
So he was probably really excited to get this cop into the traps.
yeah.
So before we get into opening thoughts, I will tell you guys heads up that there are two outside shots in this movie.
Mm, that's proof, though, right? That's a Brendan approved Saw movie.
Yes. Yeah.
Two.
Yeah.
So what's the cutoff? Like, at what point are we just like
Saw X? Saw X is the cutoff.
How many?
Like, half the movie takes place outside.
Gotcha.
Like daylight.
Yeah, daylight. Yeah, and you know what? I will take nighttime outside shots.
Yeah, like he literally goes to a food truck.
Yeah, he sits at a cafe.
like Batman.
Okay, we're getting ahead of ourselves, though.
Yeah, we're getting ahead of ourselves. oh my God. Can you imagine, like, Amanda sitting three tables across and he does, like, the Michael Caine, like, head nod? She gives the Christian Bale head nod back. Oh, goodness. Ian, we'll start with you. Awesome. Do you remember the first time you watched this movie? I just hope you know I'm going to ask you that for every Saw movie from here on out.
I'll have the same answer.
Yeah. Like 2 days ago.
I saw it 2 hours ago.
Ian, where'd you watch it? We know that you already have it. And initial thoughts.
In that shitty Blu-ray.
You got to bring it up every time for the people that may just be joining on for Saw 4. Maybe this is their favorite Saw and they're like, I want to listen to the Saw 4 episode.
Yeah.
I don't care about Saw 1 through 3.
And that's why I started by talking about Costas's beautiful body.
Yeah, and how he's busty, and
he's a
wish you could have him
house.
Have your way with him.
He's mighty, mighty. He's letting it all hang out.
So this was my first Saw film. So we're gonna go on a little trip back to 2007. So why don't you guys strap your first Saw film.
What a weird fucking movie to start on. That is
I think it's kind of dope.
You would.
2007. I had just come back from South Carolina, moved into an apartment. We were waiting for a house to get built. It was a good time. It was a good time to be.
Was this after your first divorce or your second divorce?
It was after my first divorce.
divorce, gotcha. So
my mom was with my stepdad at the time. The things that I was into around this time, right? We got Bakugan had not just come in yet, but the video game, the major video game that I was playing was Pokemon Diamond on the original DS, the Silver Clamshell DS, the original one. Sneaking outside the recess play area, going in the hall so I can trade some Pokemans. Great time.
Was that DS? Was
staring
that
out my what?
The Diamond was DS?
Yes, 100%. It was like the first one on the DS. Staring out my window, going to school, listening to Daughtry and Chris Brown. You know,
I can't believe you were the one.
You're losing us.
He's taking us back to 2007, all
right? 2007, right? We let my mom do this thing where we just let her go pick out a movie. She usually brings back absolute shitters like The Messenger and The Haunting in Connecticut, which turned out to be an absolute non-shitter. Brendan.
It sounds like you look back upon this very, very fondly, the your mom picking shitty movies and
yes.
stuff.
Nice. Yeah. So we let her go. We let her do her thing, right?
She Mom's brings on back, the loose at the Blockbuster.
She brings back this film, right? I'm 8
so
years
your
old.
Mom, so wait, hold on.
She won't let me watch Vacancy.
Your mom sees yeah. the fourth film in a franchise that yeah. she hasn't seen before and goes, yes. That's awesome.
Yeah, she's built different, honestly. She brings back this film. She gets we make a little ice cream sandwich, Eggo waffles in between or on top and bottom, vanilla ice cream in between. It's a fantastic time. You know how many times I'd eye muff it for this film? Which is eye muffing, like putting your hands over your eyes. Did you guys not?
I thought
you didn't have that.
Never called it eye muffet.
Oh. No, but, I'm just saying
we had eye muffing
my eyes.
I had eye muff for probably 60% of this movie.
I don't like the term eye muff. I'm just gonna
no.
Go
it
out
makes
there
me very uncomfortable.
Yeah, eye muff. I don't like it.
Yeah, eye muff.
That sounds like what happens when you get pink eye.
Mm.
And then when a babe comes on, my stepdad called her a muffin. Kind of like stub muffin, like stud muffin. But that's like an 80-year-old woman kind of terminology. Anyways, so this kind of scarred me for a while. Had dreams about her for about a week. And then I watched it. I rewatched it about 2 years ago. It was all right. Not the greatest. And then I watched it yesterday.
He's turning it around. He's turning it around.
Then I watched it yesterday.
Here he comes. Here he comes. The train's coming into the station, boys.
Ian, I hope you know how I'm so excited to hear what you're about to say.
This director,
be so funny.
I think he's single-handedly the person who you should think of when you're referencing the Saw series. Like he brought John's journey to an end. And started a whole new franchise with just three films.
I didn't even. That is such a good point. I that's something like he, and I'm going to steal your word. He brings John's journey to an end, while a new group of writers who's going to finish out the franchise brings the start of the blank era. And I think you know what word I. Oh no, mm-hmm. we see Hoffman
yeah.
in on it. So they. DLB.
Audience, I just want to let you guys know that you can't see the video, but we're watching Brennan's eyes light up in real time.
it's a way in that, Ian, that's why I appreciate you. Sometimes you make me think.
Every
things.
Time Brennan gets drunk, he gets so woozy over Ian. It's so
I am
weird.
Not drunk. I am not. I've had one beer.
So, okay.
It's just, that is such a good point. Continue. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. He Ugh. Is single-handedly to blame for... It for this series, like he brought it to fruition. He left John on a good note, and he just extended it, like for everyone. Good on Darren Boozman, and good on this movie.
But did you like it?
That being said,
we'll get into that. We'll get into that.
Kyle, let's go with you.
God, we're at the 30-minute mark.
Hold on. I'm going to do that one thing where, like, I say something, and then Ian steals what I say, and then you think that he says it, but I'm going to say it this time, okay?
Okay.
Saw 4 it's very interesting, because I feel like that it kind of brings everything to a close with John's journey, and just wraps it up in, like, a little bow. I think Lynn Bousman... is just the pioneer of this Saw franchise. That's when you say, Kyle, that's good.
Literally what I just said.
No, but Saw 4. Okay, so first time I've seen it. Just came off of it 2 hours or 2.5 hours ago. This is where I like my journey ended, or three is where my journey ended. So this is
from going in raw.
All these years, 2007, I was still like a little kid, man. I was younger than Ian.
Well, let's not say little kid, younger. You were 18.
I feels like I was a kid, dude. 2007. I was like as old as Ian's girlfriend now. Let's just put it that way.
Wait, you were 18. I was actually 8. I was actually a kid.
But 2007. So from 2007 to 2024, I have not seen a Saw film. And so starting this, picking this up where I left off is a little weird, but cool at the same time. Mm-hmm. I do feel like this film has a lot of cool things going for it that personally spoke to me,
like,
which is seeing the origination of Saw's first kill, or not Saw's,
John Kramer.
Kramer, thank you. I'm spacing. Kramer's first kill. Kramer's first setup to his first trap.
When you keep calling him Kramer, and I can only think of Michael Richardson now.
I'm never calling him John. From this point forward, I'm calling him Kramer.
Okay.
So I just want you to know that. But yeah, so seeing the it kind of goes back to the beginning while also tying up the end, like kind of like what Ian was saying. So it was cool seeing where it all started. I will say that this movie has the least effective traps in the franchise so far, and the worst twist easily. Just because it's so easy to see it coming. We saw this guy being the bad guy from the last Saw. Like, everyone knew it was coming. And so there was really no big payoff like the other ones had. But I think it was a cool sequel. And I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say about it.
What is Saw 4, if not cinema? I think that's exactly what I said for Saw 3. Ian,
yeah,
real quick, you were talking about the Eggo waffle ice cream sandwiches with the two Eggos on the outside and the ice cream on the inside.
Yeah.
I would like to picture my own type of ice cream sandwich where Costas Mandalore's breasts are the Eggo waffles and my head is the ice cream.
Someone please Photoshop that and send it to ruminationsoffredfrom@gmail.com, please.
This is at this point in our franchise ranking, and I'm spilling the beans. This is my favorite film of the four.
You just said Saw 3 is your favorite film.
Yeah, that no. I when I said Saw 3, I was referring to the first three that we have covered. I was very clear on that.
So you're starting from the
every Saw it's
from the bottom.
Yeah, every movie. I'm well, going
you,
to
starting
get,
the list over.
Yeah, oh, I'm starting the list over with every
starting
with
list
every,
over.
Yes. So when we get to Saw 5, if I think Saw 5 is better than Saw 4, Saw 5 will be my top.
And it will be.
It will not. Trust me, it will not. Saw 4, the transitions, I love them. The multiple, I like how we get to see the inception of what, quote, drove me to suicide. We see what starts off truly John's character arc. We see his wife, Jill Tuck, amazing, love her. We see the she gets an unwanted abortion from Cecil. Kyle, wait till you see who Cecil is friends with. You're not
wait till you
it.
See Cecil. It was cool. He was the first Saw victim.
Ian, am I completely forgetting? Do we see who Cecil is friends with in this movie?
No,
we don't. Okay, all right. That comes later. You'll see who he's friends with.
But why is that significant?
It's very significant.
Everything is significant.
It's actually
significant?
Yes, yeah. He's not significant. It's who he's friends with that is significant.
You're getting into it, Kyle. Just accept it.
Kyle, you're talking to two jig heads over here.
Okay. They're going to bring up someone who was in the first trap that wasn't even shown, and he's going to be an important piece. You know what I'm trying to say.
The guy that is in the barbed wire trap in the first movie, the big dude, we see him in Jill's medical center.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You also see people from Saw 2 in this too.
Yeah.
So
Nightwalker from the second one.
The Nightwalker. The transitions, I love them. I love how it's very clear that John's work is still going to go on. I love the Hoffman twist. I love the addition of Special Agent Perez and Strom. Two powerhouses, yes.
How do you think the Hoffman twist compares to the other twists in the franchise so far?
So far, I think that it doesn't matter if you realized in Saw 3 that Hoffman was a part of it. That answers your question. Because I think
it doesn't answer my question. So, like, how would you compare them though? Like, okay, the effectiveness and like the impact and the strength of the twist.
Okay, so there's...
Let's just go off of the assumption that you don't know he's bad.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if we're going off the Hoffman twist and the Hoffman mm-hmm. twist alone, I think it's very effective. For me, it's very effective. And now I will say that is probably completely tinged in bias, so I'm not going to be able to answer your question unbiased because I love his character. I'm obsessed with his character.
Gotcha.
Okay. The idea that at the beginning of this film, we see Kramer's dead body. And then at the end of the film, Jeff pops up. It blows my mind every time. I can't remember my exact reaction in the theater when that happened. But I know a lot of the people in the theater gasped.
Jeff,
yeah.
From the third film. The guy who had the fake American accent who lost his son.
The guy from Wizards Warriors of Virtue.
So that was a twist, right? That was supposed to be a twist. Like I wasn't just a fucking idiot the whole time and not realizing that it was completely parallel with Saw 3.
You don't know until that moment.
Okay. I just want to make sure because
correct. Yeah.
I got confused to the point of almost anger where I was like, should I have known this the whole time? Like, was I just not paying attention to like clues or something? But, okay. So that was a twist.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
That
was an interesting twist.
Oh yeah.
And like that part of it.
Yes. And it's going to set up a beautiful cat and mouse game between Detective Hoffman and Special Agent Peter Strom. And it is fucking gorgeous. Let's talk about the traps. So there are there are technically five traps in this movie. The first one is... So this is the only Saw film that doesn't start with an opening trap, which it is what it is. You could take that for what it's worth. It doesn't bother me. I know a lot of people aren't big fans of it. The first trap is the guy... there's the two guys. I don't think we know the name of the big bald dude. His eyes are sewn shut, but we will find out the name of the second gentleman, Art Blank, who is John Kramer's and Jill Tuck's lawyer. His mouth is sewn shut. Thoughts on... Actually, no, I'm not even going to do it that way. Do you guys have a favorite trap, or do you want to go trap by trap?
We can do trap by trap.
Okay.
I just like the name of this one, which is Hear No Evil, See No Evil. That's the name of the trap, right? Glorious name.
I don't know.
How do you know the name of the trap?
Yeah, where did you find it?
I think it... I don't know. I think that's what it's just been called. Like, you have the carousel, you have the... I don't know. The
shotgun carousel, yeah.
The shotgun carousel. I don't know if they, like, officially have names, but I don't know.
You're talking about the very beginning, right?
Yeah, where they're chained up.
You said it so nonchalantly, like it's common knowledge that it's... That's the name of the tribe. You're like, yeah, that's what everybody fucking calls it, right? Nobody calls it that.
No, I would
pretty
say
sure that's just what it's called.
Yeah, I would say that if I were
just what it's called. Like, how do people know that?
If I were to see this trap on a list of, let's say, top 10 best saw traps, that's what I would assume it was probably called.
But who coined it? It's not like an official thing, right?
Well, I mean, like in the last movie, there's the rack. There's the ice room. I think that if the name of the trap isn't specifically said, like the rack in Saw 3, I think it's fair for the internet to just kind of come up with a consensus name for the trap, which has happened to a lot of them. And I think that's kind of the perfect name for this trap.
Okay, so Ian found it out from the internet. That's where I'm getting at.
I would assume so.
Okay. I'm just curious because
that's a philosophically deep reading of Saw 4.
It just came to him based on the visual.
I've heard it.
Okay, you've heard it. Okay. All right. I just want to make sure.
I don't know where I heard it. I don't remember
that's what it was called.
Does anyone remember why these guys are in the trap? Or because Art Blank isn't really a bad dude. Wait, no. Art Blank is the lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the lawyer that was really just doing his job, and he got played by the cops. That's
weird. Yeah.
It doesn't matter who you defend. Like, that's just your job.
Mm-hmm. So, thoughts on this first trap? Leave it.
I didn't like how at the very end, after he won the trap, he opened his mouth. Could have saved a life by doing that. Could have saved some time.
How to say?
But this trap, it's all right.
Too much CGI blood in it, though.
Oh my god! Yeah, it's like a sci-fi network kind of editing with the blood. Kyle, what'd you think?
It was all right. I feel like it lost its effectiveness on me when there was like a lack of context to what was going on and why they're in the trap. Kind of like you said, like why are they in the trap? And maybe that was a result of was there like an audio played before the trap started or anything? Like, I don't remember that.
I don't believe so.
Yeah, which is a first too. Like, I don't feel like there was.
I think there was something said.
There had to be something.
There
probably wasn't, because that dude would have been able to hear.
Yeah. They kind of just woke up, and so there was no
Yeah.
So like on that front, it was a little different, and it lost its effectiveness with me. But it was okay. Visually, it was cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Real quick, I completely forgot this. Before we move on, Kyle, interested in your thoughts on. So remember the tape that we see Jigsaw swallow in 3, that honker of a tape?
Yeah.
So at the beginning of the film, after we see John Kramer's penis, we see the tape.
Good looking
tape.
Which is,
yeah, yes, it is. Which is the tape is when Detective Hoffman is called to the morgue. Mm-hmm. He listens to the tape, and we kind of start this film and end this film with the tape, because we only hear the very beginning of the tape at the beginning of the film, and we kind of think that's it. And then at the end, we hear John saying, "My work, fret not, my work will continue," all this stuff. What was your thought on the payoff of that tape, or had you completely forgotten about it?
Oh, no, I remembered completely.
Okay.
First and foremost, I just want to talk about the intro, which is probably, I know a lot of people think it's like a negative thing that it didn't start out with a trap, but I thought that intro was fucking awesome. And I thought it looked really cool. I actually like the subtlety of just getting right into it. You're continuing from Saw 3. It's right where they left off, but it's technically not. It's at the end of the movie, but it's it's right where they left off, which I thought was cool. I thought the visuals and just the way everything looked was dope. The way they opened up the ribcage, I just thought everything was cool. I thought it looked really, really cool, and I was in for it the whole time. When they cut open the stomach, saw the tape, I remembered completely. I knew where that was going. I remember it, I was totally on board. But when I was watching it initially, it did kind of make little to no sense because it was in fact the end of the movie. So I was wondering why he was getting this test tape of sorts in kind of the beginning of the journey. And then the way it played out, it didn't really make sense. I think this film would definitely hit way better on a second watch, knowing the fact that it's playing parallel to Saw 3. I think it's way stronger probably on a second viewing than a first. But I think I... Sorry, what was your initial question?
Yeah, you more or less answered it.
Okay.
all right, so the second trap we have is once Detective Riggs is at the very beginning of his Saw journey, he is... I like how the only reason he's being tested is because he cares too much about his work.
Yeah, it's fucking bullshit. This is so stupid.
This is my biggest problem with the film, and it always has.
Okay, let's talk about the problems, baby.
He gets set into a Saw game for being a hero. Like, I don't understand John's ideology behind that. He should have been promoting, obviously he's a villain and a psychopath, but he should, with his ideology, he should have been promoting people who are heroic, stand up to, and you know, don't do drugs and don't do this, you know. But Riggs is literally a fucking
the
hero,
good guy, like, yeah, the guy you're modeled after and supposed to be, and for caring too much. Yeah, like you said,
like he won't go on vacation because he thinks there might be someone to save.
But like, on the flip side.
What?
And that's why it destroys his relationship with his wife. Well, and that's what John is trying to show him.
Yeah, but that's not enough anymore. That one was already played out in the other, like in the previous Saw. Like that's like it's being repeated. Like that with the first Saw where he's into his work too much, he's ruining his relationship with his wife, or even the Saw 3. You know what I mean? Anyway,
their obsession ruins their relationship.
Yes.
Well, Eric Matthews' obsession is just closing the case by planting evidence.
Yeah.
Dr. Lawrence Gordon's obsession is getting high and fucking his TAs.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying it's a one for one. I'm just saying the obsession of something else is ruining what he has in front of him, which is a theme that is kind of carried through.
Yeah.
The film. So by the time we get to Saw 4, it's like we've been there, we've done that, and we're kind of getting punished again by this character. But I was going to say, on the flip side to Ian's complaint about it, is that I feel like as the Saw franchise goes on and on, you start to see more and more holes in Kramer's ideologies and what he like stands for and what he's like, his virtues and shit. Like it's starting to make less and less sense, and I don't know if that's purposefully or if it's just the way it's kind of unfolding, but you are starting to see that like it doesn't make sense anymore.
And I think that I would say that's the point. And I think that's why, because you're gonna have the diehard Saw fans who think John is quote not killing anybody and he's letting people make their own choice. I choose to believe that John Kramer is a psychopath, a very smart, rich psychopath.
Very smart.
Very
and
smart.
This trap, the one you were referencing, the scalp scene always stuck with me. Always.
And that's where we get my favorite transition, where he throws once the trap is over and he throws her into the mirror and it goes right into the police station. So fuck good. Yes. It's let's so go. Good.
Literally the dumbest thing I've ever seen. It was actually hilarious. Like Dom was doing her thing in the other room, and I literally paused it. I was like, you gotta come in here and see this. And like I rewound it like two times to play that transition. Very over the top, and it's a Saw transition, and I respect it for that. I respect it.
We get some nice little subterfuge once he saves her, where she has also been told that if she is saved, she has to get a knife. And so I guess we can consider that trap 2.5. I don't know if we want to consider that a trap or more of a test.
That's a good question, actually.
Aren't all traps tests?
No, but I get where he's going with that.
Not all tests are traps.
Damn.
Is it a 2.5 test? Deep. I think it's a 2.5 test for Rig, right? Because that went to his next stage where he then has to defend himself. So it's
correct.
And it's kind of like the punishment for his first test.
Right. It's the punishment for saving her, which he should not have done.
Yeah. But that's also that's test 2.0 for Rig, but 1.0 for her.
That's true.
Yeah. That's true. How would she have gotten herself out of that trap, by the way?
I think she was supposed to die in it.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, she would just get Kramer, scalped, right? That's Kramer it. Knew he was going to save her, though.
Yeah.
Because all of the traps that were set up for Kramer to save them were pretty easy to get him out. So,
test three, we have Riggs and the guy at the hotel. I don't know if you noticed the guy at the hotel, his dog's name was Chance. And I think that's a little on the nose and funny. And so, Kyle, we see a bit of this in Saw 3. Saw 4 is where it really ramps up, where you have the story continuing and the police are always literally one scene behind. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about this cat and mouse game between the person in the trap and the detectives getting the clues, you know, just one step behind them?
I think that this one is better. I think it plays out better in my head on a second rewatch because I feel like that the pacing and the chronological part of the investigation coinciding with Saw 3 makes more sense, and that's what it was intended to do. But I want to just shout out Agent Strom. Is he in more of them? Or yes. Is he done?
Yes.
Okay, because that guy is so over the top and it's quite literally kind of comical sometimes, but like in a good way. Yeah, he's just very like tough cop, and it's funny sometimes. But I like
this
him as character.
Here is a federal indictment with your name on it.
Yeah, dude, he gets really crazy sometimes. And
Kyle might like 5.
I think you're gonna like 5.
Yeah, I don't know, we'll see.
5 is a strong movie.
I love when he punches the wall in the interrogation, and the whole wall like shakes. Yeah. Like I'm like, bro, that set's about to fall.
Did you notice one of the interstitials when he's frantically interviewing Jill Tuck is him pointing the gun at his own head?
Yes, dude. Okay, so yeah. I laughed at those too. Those quick flashes of things that didn't happen at all.
Yeah.
Like they're not really happening, right? So it's just like crazy, like interlog moments of like
what's going through their
head, like what he feels.
Yeah,
like. It's really like there's one where she's like, ah, and he screams for a second. The one where he's like, ah, to the guns. I'm like, what is going on, bro? Those were cool too. Those made me laugh a lot. Yeah, a lot of comedy in this one.
This trap has my favorite transition, which is Riggs looking at the. I think he's looking at a bed or maybe a table, and someone walks by, and it just goes into the police firm. That's so good.
There's also the ones, just while we're on the topic of transitions, the one I thought was kind of interesting was the one where Strom was doing the interrogation and then he like turns his head around and then his head stays in the transition while it goes and like it's changing scenes, but his head stays there, which is an interesting choice. But yeah, a lot of, they went ham on the transitions.
They did this
film. I wonder why it took them till this entry to do that. Like why didn't they double down before?
Well, I think they were more testing the waters because, you know, in Saw 2 you get the scene where Eric Matthews is standing behind that fence looking at Jigsaw and he does the thing where he's freaking out, and then that slowly becomes integrated more and more. Mm-hmm. Saw 3 we start to get some fancy transitions. And I think that they were just kind of realizing as they were going along, oh, this is going to be our style from now on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the third Saw trap is the rapist at the hotel. And fun fact, the women that were in the photographs of the women that he had assaulted previously, they were Darren Lynn Bousman's girlfriend, lawyer, and there was a third person that was associated with Darren Lynn Bell.
Sister.
Interesting choices. put them as rape victims.
Thoughts on trap number three?
Least favorite.
It's not great.
I did it.
Yeah, it's not good. But
You don't like when his limbs get ripped apart?
That's the part that stayed with me.
Yeah, that was cool. Childhood. That was cool.
And I think I had to watch like the unrated version because I remember it being a lot more limbier and bloodier for sure than this last watch on the shitty Blu-ray that I had.
This wasn't the unrated?
No.
I feel like it was pretty limmy.
Limmy. it's only like a second of a limb.
Trap number four is the elementary school principal and his wife, who are introduced in the story earlier on, when we see and I really like this connection. You have Detective Riggs is at the school. This is back more when he was a beat cop, it seems. There's a little girl who has bruises on her arm. Her mother is at the school, and Detective Riggs is basically questioning them. He tells the little girl to go back to her class, and we see the guy, this old guy at the school. I don't know if he's the principal. I don't know why I'm calling him that. He looks over to the girl and puts his fingers up, telling her to be quiet. And Riggs notices this. And Riggs then ends up punching the guy in the face, which is what brings Art Blank into the movie. We find out that Hoffman covers for Riggs, saying that there's going to be no internal investigation because he said that Riggs was assaulted. So this is the trap that kind of culminates into that character's story arc, where this man and his wife are held together by these rods through the guy's body. I'll get to you in a second. Through the guy's body, the rods are in major arteries through the woman's body. They're just in pain points. Yes, Ian.
I want to say the lawyer is probably one of the only people to go through multiple traps other than like, I don't know if I'd consider Amanda going through multiple traps because she volunteered to go through the second film, right?
She was planted there.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Multiple traps.
Does Eric Matthews technically go through two?
Dude, no, it's just the one.
Yeah, Matthews. No, he does go through two because
that poor guy, man.
He gets, I feel so bad for him.
He goes through the fucking ringer, bro. Like he gets like by the end of this movie. Sorry. I don't mean to go off on like an Eric Matthews tangent, but I do like Eric Matthews, not as much as Ian, but like I do like Eric Matthews as a character, and like he already got so much done to him. And to your fear facts, it does seem like he was written out and written back in because his involvement in this film as his character just seems so disrespectful. Like they took the Eric Matthews character and it felt like they were writing him out. It didn't feel like a good send off for this character, in my opinion.
It works for me because Detective Riggs was on the force with him. They knew each other. Having Eric Matthews on the block of ice and Hoffman strapped to the chair. I think that works kind of as a bargaining tool, even though Detective Riggs can't see them. If you don't know the twist ending, I think that kind of that's a good example of an unfaithful narrator.
Sure, I'm just saying more from the perspective like it felt like a scenario where we're like, dude, we have you for like an hour of shooting, so what can we have you do? We're going to get takes of you just strapped up and in different poses, and then you can go home and we'll send you your check. And that's what it felt like watching his character. And his character, like, actually, the arc of him going through two and stuff, it just seemed like it should have been a little bit more climactic than just like having zero lines and then just getting punted off at the very end. But I don't know.
Maybe I'm just zero lines. He does say "fuck you."
Yeah, he does get one last "fuck you." But maybe I'm just a. I don't know. I'm trying to defend him. I don't know.
I feel bad. I agree with Kyle on this one. He goes through. He, as you guys put it, like turned his ankle into dust. With the ankle trap.
Escapes,
and then
kills
he's put
Amanda, or close to it.
He's put back into a trap.
And it's just
to two trap repeaters in one movie.
Trap repeaters in one movie.
That's not looking good.
He gets Hey, look, I'm just gonna say it right now because I'm not a Saw 2 fan, but he gets done dirty, dude. His character gets done dirty, and I don't like it.
The fifth trap is Cecil's trap. And this is where we get one of the awful outside shots of the Chinese New Year festival. Thoughts on Cecil's trap? I think it does a good job of showing where John started and where he's at now.
Correct. I agree with that. The very guerrilla style tactics of John learning the ropes. This is a Spider-Man fighting Bonesaw situation, right? He's in the costume he made himself. John's in his plain clothes. He's figuring everything out, right? He's trying to play by the seams of his pants. Is that a saying? I don't know. But it also shows the origination of the pig mask, which is kind of cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's pretty cool.
And I don't think we need to get into John's obsession with the Chinese Zodiac. I think that's a storyline that doesn't need to be done.
I do want to say Cecil's trap is a little more brutal.
It is
than
pretty
the other traps in this film, and I think it's because Cecil like keeps pushing his face like halfway,
yes,
and then he'll go back.
Yeah,
I think that it also it represents like mechanically a first trap, right? There's not too much to it.
Yeah.
It's all pretty, for lack of a better word, like primitive compared to the rest of his traps, like less elaborate. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of cool seeing something that's still effective, but still like not perfect. Like he's able to kind of get out of it and it breaks and stuff. Like it's showing the imperfections of Kramer's like techniques before he learns how to really dial it in.
Yeah.
And then we see the final trap, which has a test wrapped in a trap, as we kind of said, Detective Riggs isn't supposed to come through the door until the timer's up. We have Eric Matthews on the block of ice, hanging by his neck, Hoffman strapped down to the chair, and then we find out that Art Blank has a neck snapper, a spine snapper, which I guess is like symbolism for he doesn't have a spine because he lets all these awful people go. That's the only symbolism I could think of behind that trap. What did you guys think of this final kind of? Because you get multiple things. Once the final 15 minutes of this movie, it just gets bigger and bigger and badder and fucking balls to the wall.
I don't like seeing my favorite character die. Right, I think I can speak for all of us. But
best kill in the movie.
He does have like the one of the best executions in the series. I think it's so well executed the way like it looks real. It just looks real, and I honestly did not think they would put like just something simple as like two giant ice cubes clapping together, which I call the ice clapper. It just looks so good. What do you guys think about it?
No, I agree. I think I was actually rooting for him. I knew he wasn't going to live. There's no way in a world. We don't live in a world where he would exist out of this probably, you know, trap. I don't even know what I'm saying at this point. But basically what I am saying is that I'm pissed that he died, but he did go out. Like it looked visually cool. Like Ian said, it looked real. It just rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know. I don't like the finale of this one as much, and I think that's where I have the most problems with Saw 4, is that it always ends with such a high, and it always ends with such a just a climactic moment. And I feel like this is the least climactic, most predictable, and probably just least effective for me of the conclusions of the Saw movie so far, which was kind of a bummer.
I would completely disagree, 1,000%. I think I like when this when these movies get mean, and I think the ending of this is very, very mean. You have Detective Riggs bleeding out on the ground from a gunshot wound, and someone that he's worked closely with for how many years? Someone that's had his back time and time again. He sees Detective Hoffman in this trap as he's dying, and then Detective Hoffman stands up, and the last moments of Riggs's life are watching someone he's worked closely with just completely turn on him. The person that Riggs has been looking for was right under his nose the entire time. And then you get the addition of finding out, of seeing Jeff Denlin, and us finding out that this is taking place at the same time as Saw 3. We see the reason that the door shut on Peter Strom was because Detective Hoffman, after he takes off his suspenders, he's the one that shuts the door on Strom, locking him in the room. I think that this is the most, I think this is a more effective ending than watching John Kramer die at the end of Saw 3.
Ian?
Okay.
I disagree, but I respect it.
All right. Do you guys have any final thoughts then before we get into final thoughts?
I think we've covered most of it.
We covered a good chunk.
Yeah. All right. Well, before we get into our final thoughts and rating, we are going to take an official Ruminations of Red Rum Thick Piss break. Please enjoy a word from some of the other shows on the Ruminations Radio Network.
What's up, gang? This is Hoptimus. You've been listening to one of the great new podcasts from Ruminations Radio Network. If you want some more tasty sound vibes, come check out my new podcast, The Retro Futurist Culture, where we talk about alternate timelines, cyberpunk, anime, and other crazy worlds. If that does not strike your fancy, we have plenty of other great shows at ruminationsradionetwork.com.
And welcome back. Ian, we'll start with you. Final thoughts and rating.
Nostalgic, but this isn't a great film by any means. I do like quite a bit that's in it, but I think I just don't like it more. It's gonna get a heart because it's got Detective Matthews and my favorite character of all time, but I'm gonna give it a three of all time in the Saw franchise.
Okay.
Three and a heart.
Kyle?
I would agree mostly with what Ian said in the sense that there is a lot of cool stuff in it. It didn't speak to me as much as Saw 3 did. I think Saw 3 was just so finely tuned in a lot of ways. And I think it was a hard act to follow in my eyes personally. I was hoping it got there. It never really did. Just to recap, I just think it has the weakest traps. It definitely has a lesser stellar conclusion, in my opinion. But it was cool seeing the like origination of John's traps and the origination of his motives and things like that. It was cool. But I'm going to give it a 3 and no heart.
Sorry, I'm just doing the math. I enjoy this film very, very much. I love the story that it ends and the story that it sets up. The traps are whatever. I like this one more for the story and for what this for where the franchise has gone to this point and what it's setting up for the final film. So I'm going to give it a 4.5 and a heart. So that brings the official score to a 3.5 and a heart. Which I can't remember what the last movie got.
I think it got a 4.
Did it? Okay. So I'm just pulling up my list now.
Yep.
Here it is. It is time for the Saw universe's favorite game. Could you imagine just like what it would be like to live in the world that Saw exists in?
We kind of do.
Yeah, that's true. But it is time for the world's favorite game. What's in the box? It is the game where I will read a description of a movie from Letterboxd, and my co-hosts will have to guess the average Letterboxd score within 0.3 points. If they get that correct within 0.3 points, they will be awarded a point. We will then move on to the second round, where they will have to guess the decade. If they get the decade correct, they will get a point, and they will get to move on to the third and final round, where they have to guess the year. And if they get that right, they get a third point. Gentlemen, are you ready?
See, whatever. Really quick, sorry, there's one more thing I wanted to add. I know this is late to the game. Sorry, guys. I had a huge pet peeve, because I was like, how is Kramer's voice in all these tapes when he's dead and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, it takes place, coincides with Saw 3. So kind of sort of. Really.
His voice will be used in later films, but the way that the voice is generated kind of makes sense.
I'm ready. See whatever.
You'll see.
All of these films have a connection. And if you can figure out what that connection is, you will get an extra point. Number one.
Costas Mandalore is in all of them.
Nope.
Damn it.
A beautiful, busty man is in all of them.
he did have 4. That was going to be mine. But 2 of his movies didn't have aggregated scores. Mm. So, number one. Tagline, time waits for no one. Strangers awaken in individual holding cells with no memory of how they arrived. They realize if they don't acquire enough online likes and a timely number, they'll die horribly at the hands of a sinister executioner.
Wow, this movie is probably terrible.
2.3.
2.2.
2.1 is probably.
I was going to go 2.1.
But yeah, 2.2. Same. That was my first guess.
All right, I'm going to have you individually say it.
2.2.
Three.
Jesus Christ.
2.2, 2.3.
Well, you're both incorrect. It's a 2.7. Okay. Guess the decade.
2010s.
2010s.
Yeah, it's either 2010s or 2020s. I'm going to go 2010s.
Donuts All Around. It is 2022's Death Count, directed by Michael Sue. Number 2. Tagline.
You rhyming.
Tagline. Fight back or die. This description's a doozy. Bear with me. The film follows John Crenshaw as he accompanies his girlfriend and her students on a weekend nature photography expedition deep in the woods. What should be an educational and fun-filled weekend turns into horror as the group is besieged by an unspeakable evil, a horde of hideously disfigured mutant humans with an insatiable taste for blood. All things go from bad to worse. Crenshaw becomes their only hope if they are going to get out alive.
These all seem really bad. 2.5.
It's got a banger poster.
Show us. Right now.
2 points. I want to believe this is higher, but 2.5 is a good guess. 2.7.
Kyle getting 2 points. Ian getting 1. It is a 2.7 guess.
Damn, they're all 2.7.
The decade.
2020s.
2010s.
Sheesh. Kyle running with it. Kyle, guess the year.
Don't turn your head to the side. You have a really bad profile with that haircut, Ian. I'm going to say 2016. Yeah.
God damn. It is 2016's The Horde, directed by Jared Cohn. Number 3. Tagline, there's something in the water. Each year, the population of sleepy Lake Victoria, Arizona explodes from 5,000 to 50,000 residents for the annual spring break celebration. But then an earthquake opens an underwater chasm, revealing an enormous swarm of ancient piranha that have been dormant for thousands of years now with the taste for human flesh. This year, there's something more to worry about than the usual hangovers and complaints from locals. A new type of terror is about to be cut loose on Lake Victoria.
Give me 2.7.
Are you guys sticking with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're both incorrect. It's a 2.3. Guess the decade.
2010.
It's a good guess. 2000s.
Aughts.
Ian getting a point. Guess the year.
So this was another rent from my mom. Shout out. It has a lot of titties in it and a lot of, it's got a dong. It's got, it's got
language.
Someone who loses his penis by a piranha and then his entire bottom section of his body. I'm going to go 2010.
Ian getting another point. It is 2010's Piranha 3D, directed by Alexandra. Let me mispronounce that name. All right, final one, boys. Tagline, evil walks among us. 1 year after his young son disappeared during a Halloween carnival, Mike Cole, played by Nicolas Cage, is haunted by eerie images and terrifying messages he can't explain. Together with his estranged wife, he will stop at nothing to unravel the mystery and find their son, and in doing so, he unearths a legend that refuses to remain buried in the past. I'm not reading that again, by the way.
Give me
2.8.
You are both incorrect. It is a 2.2. Guess the decade.
Aughts.
I'm going to go with 90s.
You are both incorrect. It is the 2015 film Pay the Ghost, directed by
Adele. Nicolas Cage in it, I'm pretty sure.
Yep, right? that's what I said if you would have shut the fuck up and listened. So I'm not even going to tell you guys what the theme is because Kyle won. So that being said,
I don't even get to guess.
Let me try to guess the theme.
It's hilarious.
No, he's too many points behind.
Oh, fair enough.
So
I thought it was just 1 point behind.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Do you want to guess the theme? Go ahead.
No, I'm not going to guess.
No guesses?
No guesses.
Okay.
I don't have a guess.
This has been another episode of Rumination of Red Rum, the head smasher, the ice block head smasher of the Ruminations Radio Network. If you like what we're doing here, please give us a follow on Twitter. Twitter's dying, but you could still follow us there. It's of Red Rum. That is OF Red Rum. Be sure to give us a follow on and a rating on whatever podcast platform you use. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, whatever. We're everywhere. We would greatly appreciate. We're still trying to hit that 100 review thing so we can become tomato certified, tomato approved.
Oh, yeah. We want
that'd be cool. But that being said, I have been your host, Brendan, and with us, as always, is the guy who desperately needs a haircut, it's Ian with two E's.
Lou Ferrigno would have been great in See No Evil, Hear No Evil. Trap.
And also with us. He's not wearing a snapback. It's actually a dad cap, which I think can be easily worked into your intro whenever you're wearing one of those hats.
It's Hell yeah.
Kyle with a K.
Hashtag justice for Eric Matthews.
Hashtag it. Stay spooky, folks.